Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing well, fellas. How you guys doing this morning?
We are doing great, and Titans fans also doing great. They go into Baltimore. Yeah. Derrick Henry steals the soul of the Ravens once again. What did that win for the Titans show you about their chances moving forward? And what does it tell you about the Ravens and where they are right now?
Well, the logo stomp I thought was pretty funny.
We did too.
First off, like I'm not saying that. I love doing it when there's like no fans.
Right.
Like, I love the ability to like go in and do it and not have to deal. And Baltimore fans are not the kindest people on earth, so I'm sure that would have been a slightly different game situation. You know, following the little mix up in the middle of the field. What I thought was interesting about that was, I remember years and years and years going into the Patriots locker room, including when Mike Vrabel was there, and just hearing the Patriots constantly for years manufacture all these, us against the world kind of mentality story themes, always. And I'm like sitting there like, man, we've been calling you guys a dynasty for like a decade, and you're still coming up with like, what are these problems where everybody's against us and finding a way to sort of fortify themselves? And that's what I thought about when I saw that. I was like kind of, obviously this isn't the Patriots, but I see this sort of maneuver to galvanize. And, I think the coaching staff leaning into that a little bit with the players and the jaw jacking that went on between, the coaches and then sort of, the post game handshake situation, was it on purpose? Was it not? All these different things. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think it helps to, particularly in a stretch of any season, but particularly this season, give a little extra juice to guys. I thought this was an impressive win. As you said, I mean, Derrick Henry, just to sort of see what happened in overtime and kind of how the flow of the game went in the second half. This, I'm kind of like, okay, now I'm starting to see, particularly from offense, some of the hallmarks of this team that I was familiar with last year that really felt like it carried them into the playoffs. And then I look at Baltimore and, man, I'll tell you what, they lack a deep threat in the worst possible way. I mean, like, flat out, Willie Snead, Dez Bryant are never going to get you anything deep. And I think taking away the deep shot and some of the play action stuff, because the running scheme is so, it's not as effective as it was last year for Baltimore, has really hurt them. So I think it's interesting, because to me it was just one of those games where you sit there and you look at the overall picture of it and you say, well, other than Kansas City, I mean, what other team in the NFC is clearly better? What other team in the AFC is clearly better than Tennessee? And I think they're in the mix with everybody else. They're going to have to deal with Kansas City. We've seen that, Kansas City's got some vulnerabilities. So I can understand fans feeling really good coming out of this one. And they have every right to feel that way. And like I said, the pregame stuff, I really kind of like that.
You feeling any better at all about the Colts with this sort of offensive / Phil Rivers renaissance we're seeing?
I don't believe in the Phillip Rivers renaissance. The thing about Rivers is, I think, is he playing better? Yes. Is offensive line playing better? Yes. The running game, I still don't think it's completely sorted out. I know they're like, oh, Jonathan Taylor, now they're, leaning back into him again. I still don't think those fumbling problems have gone away. I expect that's something that'll rear its head again. And, Rivers, the problem with Rivers is when you watch him over the totality of a game, I'm telling you, the guy, when you see games where you're like, oh, he only had one interception, you're happy about that, go watch the film. There are a couple that were dropped, or there are, something was misplayed in the secondary, because he's still prone every single game. You can count three or four passes that he sticks in place. You're like, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? And not even like under pressure duress situations. It's decision. He's making a decision to put a ball in a place that is just not smart. And I think you can get away with that over the course of a regular season with a good team. But I think when you get into the playoffs, you know, that's something that is going to be really critical for them. So I'm calling it now. You're going to see the Colts. There's going to be a Phillip Rivers, one of those just head scratching, you know, almost like what we saw last night with Tom Brady. Like, what is this guy doing and why is he throwing the ball there? You know, he's far too experienced to be doing this at this stage in his career, yet he is.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, you brought up Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, and it's been interesting to watch. There are games this year where they've looked great. Brady's looked awesome. And then you have games like last night where Brady looks like a rookie quarterback, and it's almost unbelievable what you're seeing out there from him. What do you make of Brady and the Bucs and their chances moving forward here, given how inconsistent they've been?
I'm telling you, this offensive scheme, I know everybody thought, well, Brady's going in there and it's going to be his scheme and they're just going to run, you know, the Patriots stuff or whatever. No, that's not at all what has happened. Like, Tom Brady has gone in there and he's running, you know, the Bruce Arians, Byron Leftwich scheme. And early on in the season when he was making some mistakes, I think what was interesting was if you really paid close attention, there were a couple of times where they would break huddle and he would look at his wristband, which told me he doesn't know the offense completely right now. Like, he's still walking up the line of scrimmage, at least in the first few games of the season, and trying to figure some things out schematically in terms of the calls and what they're doing at the line of scrimmage. I'm like, man, you just never, when was the last time Tom Brady ever had to look at his wrist to figure out what he was doing at the line of scrimmage? Not so much now, but you still see things scheme-wise. That, so for, okay, good example, when that game last night when he throws the interception, you have a situation where there's enough time on the clock, you know, you can tie the game with a field goal, so you know he's moving the ball, and you take a deep shot down the middle of the field, and I'm kind of like, that's not what would happen in New England. That's not the offense he ran in New England. Like, he ran a lot of 15 and in New England, a lot. I mean, the majority of their offense in New England was 15 and in, and part of that was because of the personnel they had there, whatever. But that's clearly what he became comfortable running. And now you have Godwin, you have Evans, you have a lot of deep shot players. And so they try to, you know, run the functionality through still taking deep shots. Well, Tom, for whatever reason, either because he hasn't done it in a while or, you know, he's still getting comfortable with some of the aspects of that offense, he's making a lot of mistakes. And the interceptions last night, I just don't see – I don't understand how a player of his caliber didn't see the safety coming off. Like, it was just – particularly the last one was just – it was unbelievable. And, you know, so I we can say what we want about the scheme, which I do think that has something to do with it. And what, you know, he spent decades running in New England, but also that was a bad decision. He's making some bad decisions, and I don't know if it's like him forcing it, you know, or he feels like he has a certain confidence in a guy like Mike Evans or whatever, and, you know, that plays into it, but not where he should be now. And the thing is, I don't think Bruce Arians, he'll circle the wagons when he has to, but he's going to continue to be critical of Brady, you know, if this keeps happening. And he's not going to allow people to go, well, it's a Byron Leftwich thing, or Bruce Arians needs to take over play calling or whatever. Bruce isn't going to play that game. He's going to go, this is Tom. It's not our play calling. It's not our OC. It's the player who's got to get used to how this is functioning.
I think it's all just Antonio Brown karma, but I can't prove it.
It could be.
So league-wide, Charles, crazy year, crazy offseason coming. Some teams in some trouble here moving forward.
The Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, what are you going to do? You're watching that situation and Carson Wentz is falling apart. Like, and this is a player that, first off, it's a franchise that is so underwater next year with the salary cap. You know, I think they're looking at like 50, 60 million in the red as it is with the rollback. And so you already have a lot of bloodletting that's got to happen there. I think there's issues in the coaching staff. But Carson Wentz, it's like all season it's sort of like, well, as long as they get Wentz right, it'll be okay. And he just, every single game, it's like he's, you know, not only turning the ball over, but continually making bad mistakes. I think mechanically So, you know, I've known people in their staff for a while, and including some people who have left the building. And you just hear stories about how, like, even going back to, you know, his rookie season, there was always this penchant for him to get really sloppy in terms of his mechanics. And then, like, every off season having to tune that up, being like, okay, well, we got to fix this. And you can't have too many people in his ear, and it screws him up. And I think he's kind of reverted back to that, having some of these mechanics problems. You know, the decision making that he's fallen into is not good for the Eagles, and the contract's already there. You can't get rid of this guy. I mean, you're talking, I could, off the top of my head, I mean, it's got to be between a $50 and $60 million cap hit to not have him on the roster after this season. And that's just, I don't have any clue how you could possibly do that unless GM Howie Roseman's like, yeah, I'm out of here. Like, I'm going to go somewhere else. You know? So, yeah, I think the Eagles are definitely a team that they're looking at having to have some significant some alterations, coaching alterations, roster alterations. It could be a complete teardown around Wentz. They, you know, feel like they just got to figure it out with him. And then, you know, I think beyond the Eagles, you know, you're starting to see other teams that I think the Jets, interestingly enough, might have a problem here with how bad the season's going right now and how it relates to Joe Burrow and what just happened with Burrow in Cincinnati, because the Jets, other than Mekhi Becton, their offensive line has been just atrocious this year. And I'm telling you, Trevor Lawrence and the people that advised him are absolutely 100% looking at Burrow and going, we can't have a situation where this kid's going to go, you know, to some team and they're going to Joe Burrow him. They're going to just pile on to him and he's going to end up suffering this catastrophic knee injury or just get, you know, shelled like David Carr with the Texans, you know, 20 years ago. We cannot have that happen. So weirdly enough, what happened with the Bengals, I think, kind of hurts the Jets moving forward.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, last thing for you here. Look, I think if you ask most people right now, Patrick Mahomes probably getting their MVP vote. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Where does Ben Roethlisberger fit in that conversation, given the fact that he's come back in and the Steelers still undefeated on the season, 10-0, and obviously we saw the Steelers without him last year. Where do you think Roethlisberger fits into that conversation?
You know, I think he's in there. I actually have an MVP vote, and I think I would consider, you know, Ben as being a guy that's part of that conversation. I think that I don't think there's any question that, you know, comeback player of the year, he probably has, you know, laced up pretty well. I let's see how they finish the remainder of the year. I think the thing that separates Mahomes from Roethlisberger is that, or at least for me, if I start to parse out the votes, and again, you know, you got to kind of see how the remainder of the season goes for the Steelers. I mean, if they really run the table, you really, really have to factor that in just because of how difficult it is. I think Ben's having a fantastic year. The one thing about Mahomes, though, that I think sets him apart in an MVP conversation is, you know, when they're playing that game Sunday, and, you know, Kansas City gets the ball back and, you know, needing a touchdown. And I remember looking up and I was like, all right, how much time is on the clock? And it was like 1:40. And I'm like, yeah, that's like 1:15 too much. And it's I almost wonder when it will start to be a detriment for Pat Mahomes that we start to take for granted how good he is, the numbers he puts up. It took him a while to kind of get in the MVP conversation this year. And all of a sudden I looked at his numbers and it was like a week or two ago, he had like 25 touchdowns and one interception. And I'm like, how, what the heck? Like he's so crazy at this point that it's like Bill Belichick for all those years. It was like, he rarely won coach of the year. And it was just because you're like, well, it's the Patriots and it's Bill and it's Tom. And you just, you know, it ends up being something that almost gets weighted against him. I think, though, when you separate Ben and Patrick Mahomes, I don't know if there's a minute and 40 left on the clock and they need a touchdown. I'm not looking at Ben Roethlisberger and thinking the percentages are far higher that he's going to score a touchdown versus not scoring a touchdown. With Mahomes, I really absolutely feel that way. Actually, it's like if there's a minute 40 and they need a touchdown, I'm like, they're probably going to get it. So I think that's kind of what, you know, hurts Roethlisberger. But again, this is obviously rare what the Steelers are doing. If they were on the table, I just don't see any way you can't factor in Ben. I'd be stunned if he didn't get some MVP votes in a season where, you know, they could potentially go 16-0 or 15-1 or 14-2. That's pretty special.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Charles, thanks for joining us, man. Great stuff as always. Happy Thanksgiving and enjoy that game on Thursday between Washington and Dallas. We're all looking forward to it.
Yeah, and by the way, why are the Lions still playing?
It's tradition,
like,
Charles.
Seriously, like people need to start that. I know Ford Motor Company for a really long time was like the lead NFL sponsor. That's over. Okay, the Lions don't deserve a Thanksgiving Day game anymore. I've said my piece. Enjoy your holiday. Be safe.
Thanks, Charles. We appreciate it. I think that may be something we could all get behind. Getting the Lions off of Thanksgiving Day football. It is tradition, Joe.
I actually think it's hilarious. I want it to continue.
When we come back, it seems like to me the Steelers aren't getting a whole lot of love, even though they're 10-0, had the chance to go undefeated in the regular season. Why is that? Where's the love for the Pittsburgh Steelers? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Jamie Watson, Nashville SC analyst, joining us at 9:30. We'll look ahead to the matchup tonight between Nashville SC and Toronto FC. Big playoff match. Looking forward to that. And you can hear that game on ESPN 94.9, starting with pregame coverage at 4:45. Joe had Charles Robinson on in the last segment, and it's interesting that the Steelers, another win on Sunday. They moved to 10-0 on the season, and yet it feels like everyone's not really talking about them in the AFC. The conversation still around the Kansas City Chiefs, and we even heard Charles in the last segment talk about how, you know, with the Titans, they're dealing with Kansas City in the AFC, but no really other team in the AFC clearly better than the Titans. And I find that interesting with the Steelers being 10-0. Roethlisberger's come in. That defense has been very good all season long. Do you think the Steelers have been disrespected a little bit in the AFC, given the fact that they are 10-0 and they still have a chance to run the table and go 16-0 in the regular season?
It's a little weird just because I think of the Steelers kind of how I think of like the Cowboys and, you know, the Packers, the Patriots in the last couple decades, like that, a team that usually gets more attention than it deserves. I don't know if it's because – is it because they're just not as exciting as, like, a Kansas City? Or even – I mean, honestly, even, like, with the Ravens last year, because it was Lamar Jackson, it was this different kind of offense. There was so much attention on that. But I don't know if the Steelers are being disrespected. But you're right that they haven't really been talked about. It doesn't feel like they haven't been – I mean, everyone looks at the AFC. I do. I look at the AFC as Kansas City and everybody else. I think the Steelers are really good. We saw them here, but you know, the Titans also didn't play their best and were a makeable field goal away from overtime in that game. I'm trying to think of like what's the when you look at the Steelers. I'm looking at their schedule right now. What's the most impressive thing they've done? I think probably coming in here, and winning that game. I mean, they have had an incredibly soft schedule. If you look at Cowboys, Bengals, Jaguars, Giants, Broncos, Texans, Eagles.
I mean, it's been Charmin soft.
You know, and now they also took the Browns apart, you know, 38-7 in that big showdown. For all the Browns fans who want this game flexed here, you know, just remember, sometimes the primetime stage.
They own the Browns, though. Like, Ben Roethlisberger has partial ownership of the Cleveland Browns.
They do. So I'm looking at the rest of the way. So obviously, you know, Ravens, a game we all hope happens Thanksgiving night. You got Washington football team. You got the Bengals again. Well, they do have Colts, Browns, and Bills ahead. So they have some tough games ahead. But I just think that – I think Roethlisberger – I mean, you brought up a fair point. I honestly, if someone asked me to list MVP candidates and you hadn't brought that up, I don't think I would have even thought of him. But his numbers are very good. And he's certainly going to be comeback player of the year. They just seem like they're a really good team that happens to be 10-0 to me.
Well, it's just interesting that And I heard Darren Donick and Chase talking about this a little bit yesterday. It's interesting when you get a quarterback on what is the best record in the NFL right now, the best team in the AFC from a record perspective. Usually that quarterback's right in the thick of things in the MVP conversation. And if you were to list your top five MVP candidates this year, my guess is for most people, Roethlisberger's not on it. Like, you're probably talking, you know, Kyler Murray, obviously Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. Like, I don't know where Roethlisberger falls in on that mix, and he's thrown for 2,500 yards, 24 touchdowns, and five picks. I mean, his numbers are pretty good, and he's on the best team from a record perspective in the AFC. Now, let me quickly point out, like, I still agree Kansas City is the best team in the AFC, and I don't think it's particularly close. Like, I think there's a pretty big margin there when they're at the top of their game that just people can't keep up with Mahomes and that offense. But it is interesting to me that they're 10-0 and Roethlisberger's having a great year, and he's hardly ever mentioned in the MVP conversation.
Yeah.
And I factor in what happened last year without him and how much of a difference that's made in Pittsburgh this year. I think that adds to the conversation.
It does. He just isn't dynamic, you know? I mean, he's still a good player. Again, you're talking 25-34. 24 TDs, 5 picks. You know, he's got a 101.4 rating. So if you go by QBR, he is looks like he's 11th in the league.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, good. Tannehill, by the way, is right now 7th at 106.6. But, yeah, that's the thing. When a team has a year like that, it builds. So if they get to the point where, you know, they beat their – I mean, certainly they get to the point where they're like – 13-0, 14-0, then more people start talking about it. Because it's like, how do you not consider someone, especially if his numbers stay, you know, on the path that they're on, they're going to be very good. He's going to throw for more than 4,000 yards and 30-plus touchdowns with a team with a season like that. Then I think he would get consideration. But, yeah, we're already into the LeBroning of Mahomes,
yeah,
on the MVP stuff. By the way, speaking of Charles, he brought up the field stomping, which Willie texted me yesterday asking a little bit about that and the Titans. So I saw it, but I don't remember it being that demonstrative.
No, like
as he said.
I think back to 08 when the Titans played the Steelers and Keith Bullock was like stomping all over the terrible towel right on the sideline.
Yeah,
like that was meant obviously as disrespect towards the Steelers. I didn't think the Titans on Sunday were out there just like dancing around on the logo. I think they just were on it, having a pregame meeting.
Well, so that's why. So because Willie was asking me, and I was like, "Well, they do it every game. They do that where they just all gather and they're hopping around. They're trying to get excited for the game." Now, maybe they don't necessarily always do it directly on the other team's logo.
That was awesome.
And maybe that was intentional and some sort of a, you know, sort of a statement. But it is funny. Like they're. Like, there's no one that's throwing their beer can at you after that, you know? The other team's the only thing that's going to get mad at you about that. But
nothing says scary like John Harbaugh coming out there.
Yeah.
I'm sure Malcolm Butler was terrified.
Very intimidating. And by the way, thank you to who sent us that video? The more full video clip on Twitter. I want to say thank you to our buddy 615. Who sent us that video, and at NukeBomb25 actually sent us that video. And to me, it was not technically a handshake, but they tapped each other. So it was an acknowledgement. It wasn't what people thought it was, where like Harbaugh's like, "Get away from me." They both went up to, "Yeah, okay, all right." Little tap of each other, and they moved on. So to me, that counts.
That does it?
Well, it counts. I think now I know that those guys weren't lying after the game.
Okay.
This wasn't some like, "Go away, I'm not touching," you know. It was like, okay, an acknowledgement of each other, and they moved on.
It is impressive to watch Vrabel after the game and how quickly some of these handshakes take place. Like, it's in and out, most of the time not even breaking stride, and he just runs on to the locker room. It's awesome.
Well, and he's been asked about that before. Now, he said, you know, in some cases it's after wins. He wants to congratulate each player going to the locker room. He had one with Marone that was just – it was like run to tap by and just
keep going.
He did. He went to the
– Don't even speak.
Yeah.
You just go.
Yeah. Run. And then he goes to the entrance of the locker room and waits. So, yeah. Vrabel's a guy. I mean, you know – if he has a long coaching career, I mean, there is going to be some conflicts.
Yeah.
You know? Now,
I would pick him in those conflicts.
Well, I don't think it'll get to that. I do think that if you actually had fights and coaches fought, he'd be...
Number one on the list.
Clearly number one?
Yes. Even though Mike McCarthy's out there smashing watermelons now in Dallas. Yeah, Mike Vrabel's number one on the list.
I would love to see Jim Harbaugh return to the NFL just to see the handshake between Vrabel and Harbaugh.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
Oh, do you guys remember the Harbaugh...
in Detroit?
Yeah. Yes. And, come on, help me out. Former DC here.
Yeah, Jim Schwartz.
Schwartz,
yeah.
Thank you. Oh, that was good stuff.
That was great.
Oh, man.
When we come back, we'll dive into the Nashville SC matchup tonight. Jamie Watson, Nashville SC analyst, will join us. We'll look ahead to the match against Toronto FC. But first, I got a word from FanDuel, and I got to tell you, Thanksgiving, maybe my favorite day of the year. All the food, all the football, you could sit there and watch it all day long. And now that I can bet on all the games on FanDuel Sportsbook, it makes the day even better. And if you've never bet on FanDuel before, now is the perfect time to give it a shot because they're giving new users a 25-1 odds boost on any NFL game on Thanksgiving Day. That means you can bet $5 and win $125. So, for example, if you don't have faith in the Detroit Lions, which if you've watched a game on Thanksgiving Day, there's not much reason to have faith in the Detroit Lions. You can put your money on the Houston Texans this week. And if you're going to love FanDuel, offers like these are just one of the reasons. They're America's number one sportsbook app. It's been so easy to use, and they get you your money very quickly. So a great time so far on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Just download that FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with promo code ROB, that's R-O-B, so they know that I sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. Must wager on designated boost market. Deposit required. Max bonus of $125. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789.
As Randall Leal now picks up the ball and shoots from distance, that's a fantastic strike from Randall Leal. Nashville has scored in the playing round of the playoffs, and that is a goal worthy of the postseason.
That was an absolute missile by Randall Leal on Friday night for Nashville SC against Inter Miami CF. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Tuesday morning. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Jamie Watson, Nashville SC analyst. He'll be on the call today on ESPN 94.9, pregame at 4:45, game at 5 o'clock tonight between Nashville SC and Toronto FC. Jamie, what's going on? Thanks for taking time to join us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I tell you what, hearing that bump back from break of Tony Husbin give a call at Randall Leal's goal, it gave me chills on my arm again. Like, we're right back to Friday night and a magical night where Nashville got their first playoff win. It was quite the evening, quite the goal, and quite the statement win.
I tell you, it really was, and I was there at the game on Friday night. And, Jamie, the atmosphere, even though we all know what the situation is right now in limited capacity, I thought the atmosphere was outstanding, and you could not have scripted a better playoff debut for Nashville SC. They were dominant from the start. What did you take away from that game for Nashville SC against Inter Miami CF?
Well, first off, you're absolutely right. There was a max capacity of 3,420 people there on the night, and they sounded as if there was a zero at the end of it. I mean, the atmosphere was palpable. Inter Miami brought some fans up, so they had a section that brought the noise too. It was a really fun game to be at, so I'm glad you got a chance to check it out. The reality is, these two teams came into this season, and as you mentioned, everything got turned up on its head. But Nashville and Inter Miami were always going to be linked in this first season, and whether they're comparable or not, because these two teams have gone about it in two different ways. Nashville has been very methodical in their approach with the near-term, short-term, and long-term in play, and Inter Miami came in with all the glitz and glamour. David Beckham is one of the owners, and basically said, we're going to buy every big player. If it's a big player in world soccer and you've heard of them, they're rumored or linked to be coming to Inter Miami. So there was all this sort of hype and, you know, sort of a kind of a glamour about this team. Except when these two teams met, all of the hype that you get on social media and all of the play that you get in the press, that stops. and you got to cross over the white lines. And these two teams met twice through the regular season. Nashville won 1-0 at Nissan Stadium, and then they went down to South Florida, tied 0-0. So going into this playoff game, Nashville had not lost and had not given up a goal. But inevitably, it's the playoffs. So you're always going to remember how the season ends. And there was so much riding on this match, always difficult to beat a team three times in a year. And Nashville goes out and gives their most comprehensive performance of the season, 3-0. It could have been a lot worse. The scoreline flattered Miami. And Nashville is going from strength to strength. They're peaking at the right time going into the playoffs. And three consecutive games against your expansion brothers without conceding. I don't know if the story got flipped on its head any more than it possibly could have with Nashville sort of quieting the naysayers, if you will, about their expansion brothers and Inter Miami and how they approached it and how Nashville approached it and how the outcome ended up going.
So, Jamie, this team offensively has obviously has come alive, like you said, peaking at the right time. I know the three designated players started their first match together, you know, Friday, playing a very good team tonight. Why do you think they have come together like this offensively, and what style wins tonight?
Well, it's a good question because you've got two teams right now that I think are actually in very different run of forms. And although Toronto finished second in the Eastern Conference, and actually we're playing for the overall Supporter Shield, which is the best team in Major League Soccer in the regular season, up until the final day, they actually lost three of their last four games going into the playoffs, whereas Nashville SC only lost one of their last eight, and they've had six goals in their last two games. They're actually fifth in Major League Soccer since this sort of galvanizing win in Houston on October 14th. They're fifth in goals scored in Major League Soccer. So the offense has really started to spark. I think when there was this quick buildup and short preseason and then this sort of truncated season that was broken up into, you know, a couple different parts, stop-start throughout the way, defense was always the focus because if you can solidify who your team is defensively, then you can go forward. And so now the cohesion, the sort of continuity amongst the group has started to grow. And that translates into more goals. And three goals in their last two games going against a Toronto FC team that are not impenetrable. I think that there is a way that this matchup could go in favor of Nashville FC based on the recent forms. You kind of throw out the record books overall. Look at what have you done for me lately. And right now, one team's trajectory is turning upwards in Nashville FC. And the other one for Toronto FC is sort of faltering just a bit.
Nashville SC analyst Jamie Watson on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Jamie, we saw it on Friday night. Hany Mukhtar gets the penalty kick, converts on that play. How valuable has Mukhtar been for this group this year in terms of being out there and just being a stable force for Nashville SC?
That's a great question. So, Robbie Rexo, the sort of pressure that comes with being a first designated player for a club is immense because there's always these expectations, and whether they're right, they're wrong, they're indifferent, whatever they are, they're there. It's a reality. And so Hany Mukhtar is one of the best actual soccer players. I'm talking about from one top of the 18-yard box on one side of the field to the other. He's one of the smartest. The game looks like it's in slow motion for him. He knows what you're going to do before you know what you're going to do. But that doesn't always translate to goals and assists. And he kind of got off to a slower start because there's an acclimation period to Major League Soccer. Elsewhere around the world, the game sort of has ebbs and flows where it picks up really high intensity and then it actually slows down a little bit. With Major League Soccer, it is intense. It's 100 miles an hour. It is go, go, go. Everyone's pressing. And so there's this sort of what in the world is this speed of play for 90 minutes adjustment period that every international seems to face. And then Hany Mukhtar started to grow into the season. Actually, as of right now, as we're talking, heading into this matchup tonight against Toronto FC, which will go coverage at 4:45 on 94.9, Hany has the most goals and the most assists for the team. Four goals, four assists. It's a balanced attack. 11 different players have scored, but Hany Mukhtar is finding his form at the right time heading into this big, big matchup tonight against Toronto FC. And that goal against Inter Miami off a penalty kick, that matchup I mentioned earlier where they won 1-0 at Nissan Stadium, he actually missed a penalty kick, hit the crossbar. So a little bit of validation, vindication, and I don't want to say retribution, but it certainly meant a lot and made it 2-0 25 minutes into the game. Big goal.
So how good is Alejandro Pozuelo, the midfielder for Toronto, obviously, you know, possibly the league MVP this year, guy to watch tonight on the other side?
Without a doubt. So as good as I talked about Hany Mukhtar being, Alejandro Pozuelo is the equal for Toronto FC, except he was able to add 9 goals and 10 assists. Guys, when we're asked as part of the media to put your vote in for what you call the MLS Best 11, I put Alejandro Pozuelo in my Best 11, and he ended up winning Best 11. He's just a dynamic player, can score goals, can create goals, scores them in spectacular fashion. But he'll be going up against another MLS Best 11 in Walker Zimmerman. The MLS Defender of the Year for Nashville FC will have an extra sort of sense of awareness of where Pozuelo is at all times on the field because he's that dynamic. Sort of as Pozuelo goes, so does Toronto FC. So you hear Tony Husband, you'll hear me, you'll hear Kelly Glendinning talking plenty about Alejandro Pozuelo throughout the match, and again on a pregame show at 4:45. We'll talk all about him. He's definitely going to be one of the players to watch for Toronto FC. And so Walker Zimmerman, Dax McCarty, the captain of Nashville FC, he plays defensive midfielder. They'll kind of line up against each other. They'll have certainly be aware of Pozuelo, but yeah, that's a great question because inevitably all eyes go to him for Toronto FC.
Nashville SC analyst Jamie Watson has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can hear pregame coverage on ESPN 94.9 tonight at 4:45, game beginning at 5 o'clock against Toronto FC. Jamie, great stuff. Thanks for taking time to join us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Let's begin next week after Nashville SC win in advance to base Columbus on the 29th. I'm free if you guys are free.
Hey, we're free. We're absolutely here for it. Looking forward to that and looking forward to the game tonight. Thanks, Jamie.
Gentlemen, thanks. Big fans of the show. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Appreciate you as well. When we come back, we'll look ahead at the matchup for Nashville SC tonight. Also get back into some bad college basketball news yesterday here locally. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans fans, Corner Pub is the place to check out the game with locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown, and great beer specials, including $1 off of Yazoo and Happ and Harry's draft beers, plus Happ and Harry's bucket specials. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from the Corner Pub in Brentwood this Sunday. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on their AFC South rival, the Indianapolis Colts. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks to Jamie Watson, Nashville SC analyst, for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, a big one tonight for Nashville SC. A huge win Friday night at Nissan Stadium against Inter Miami. They were dominant right from the start, 3-0 win. I mean, the penalty kick by Mukhtar there, the laser by Randall Leal to begin that game, and then Dax McCarty, I mean, basically went untouched down the half of the field and to make it 3-0 there. It was an impressive performance from start to finish on Friday night by Nashville SC, and we'll see if they're able to follow that up tonight against Toronto. And we heard Jamie talk about maybe a more winnable game than people realize tonight heading into this game. Two teams trending in opposite directions.
Yeah, you got a red-hot team at the right time. I mean, we saw it with the Titans last year. So maybe Nashville SC can keep it going. And actually, Jamie answered a question that I had, which was what would be next? So apparently 5 days, Columbus is the potential reward for this to move forward in the tournament. So seems to me like the way this team is playing that they should have a real shot here.
And the way that they are just able to defend, and this is the case in every sport, when you're great at defending like Nashville SC is and the style that Gary Smith likes to play, that's going to give you a shot. I mean, they're going to have a shot in this game. So hopefully they're able to pull it out tonight. This has been awesome to see them kind of come together at the right time here. They come back from the break from COVID, and they've just started playing really, really well and have been very entertaining to watch. So best of luck tonight for Nashville SC against Toronto. Joe, we had a discussion earlier in the show about college basketball. Some bad news yesterday for the Vols. They were supposed to play tomorrow night against Charlotte, and the game has been taken off the schedule. There was not an official announcement made yesterday that the game for sure had been canceled, but it's not looking great. Rick Barnes has been diagnosed with COVID-19, and there have been some other people in their staff slash players, apparently, who have come down with it as well. So the next couple of games that Tennessee's basketball team was supposed to kick off the season with, not looking great. They could make their season debut against Gonzaga, who is ranked number one in the country. So a mess right now, not only with Tennessee, but in college basketball in general. There's been a lot of problems with COVID-19.
Yeah, I hope that Tennessee-Gonzaga game can happen. That's a big-time game. And, you know, we have Slack channels at The Athletic for different sports, and the college basketball Slack channel is just like, I mean, it's just nonstop. This game and that game and this game. Also, on the terrible this year sucks and basketball front, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Quick Change, but Quick Change is the best halftime entertainment.
Oh, yes, sports. Yes.
David Moss died of COVID-19.
Yeah. Makes a lot of appearances. He's been at Thunder games a lot that I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him in all kinds of college basketball games. So one more awful bit of news on that front.
Yeah, it's not been fun. And obviously, you know, Rick Barnes, 66 years old, he's in pretty good shape. But anytime someone gets COVID-19 and they test positive, you know, thoughts and prayers immediately go with them. So hopefully Rick Barnes is able to beat this thing and make a full recovery very quickly. But Tennessee fans, you know, from the sports part of this, you know, they've been punched in the gut repeatedly this year by the football team. And some people, when the news came out yesterday that Tennessee and Vanderbilt will not be taking place on Saturday, they're like, oh, yes, thank God. They can't lose to Vanderbilt on Saturday. But everybody's looking forward to this basketball team. They've got a chance to have a special year with Rick Barnes and company, and not off to a great start with COVID-19 running rampant right now through college basketball.
Yeah, I think this team could be great. I mean, there's a lot of pieces. You just don't know exactly how Jaden Springer is going to come right in. You know, you got some other big – I mean, this is really the highest ranked or most touted class in school history. Corey Walker Jr., you know, Jaden Springer. They have Victor Bailey now, the Oregon transfer. And then you got the veterans coming back. I mean, Eve Pons, to me, is going to play in the NBA, I think, for sure. John Fulkerson is a guy who he's crafty. He annoys people, but the guy can play. So Keon Johnson, another member of that super highly touted class. They got a lot of talent, a lot of depth. And, you know, Rick Barnes and that staff, if they can put it together, I think it's a Final Four contender. So, question is, how many games will they be playing before the NCAA tournament begins? I don't know.
And there's been this number thrown out there that like 13 games is what it's going to take to be under consideration for the NCAA tournament. And look, we've still got a lot of time here to kind of sort through all this. And maybe in a month and a half from now, you're in a better spot. I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. But let's say for the sake of argument that this continues to be a problem in college basketball. I mean, they've got to be willing to kind of move that number around. Like if Duke plays 9 games this year, like they've got to be in the NCAA tournament, right? Like you've got to be able to move that tournament around.
Exactly.
Or that number.
If there's somebody they really want in the tournament, they'll play in the tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this year is everything's got a frozen eligibility year. Everything's off. It's whatever you can do to create an NCAA tournament, and it will happen.
Yeah, they're not going 2 years in a row without missing that. I mean, how much does that tournament bring in? It's like $1 billion,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes. It's
with a B.
With a B. Absolutely. No, I mean, you know, for 3 weeks, college basketball obviously is, to my dismay, not as popular as it should be throughout the year. But that tournament, that's the ultimate, like, everybody in the country watches because everybody has a bracket.
Yeah. And now we've got FanDuel Sportsbook a part of it as well. So even more intrigue this year for college basketball. Looking forward to that.
That's right.
Joe, as we wrap up here, we get back into the Titans-Colts discussion. And we've had some people ask about Isaiah Wilson. And let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coy in Clarksville texts in and says, Vrabel needs to be honest with us about Wilson. Can he not learn the playbook? What's the deal? Quit giving political answers Why is he not ready to be on the field yet?
Well, first of all, let me look. Vrabel's been here long enough for you to know that he's not going to, whether it's good or bad,
he's not
going to say anything about anything individually, right? So you just have to know that. This is not a special case with Isaiah Wilson that Vrabel has decided to, you know, be. I mean, he's going to say the basic stuff and as little as he can say, and then we'll see it on the field. But what's going on is, one, he wasn't in shape. That was easy to see. He got in all kinds of trouble before the season, and it has not gone well. But the idea, I don't buy for a minute that like this is a total bust from a talent perspective or ability perspective. I don't buy that at all. Question is, can they get this guy ready to go? And I think at this point, it's been long enough here. You know, I mean, really, like if you draft this guy in the first round,
he should be ready to play.
Yeah,
he should be ready to play at this point.
And he's not at this point, but it should be realistic, like in a couple weeks or whenever you may really need him, that he can go out there and function. If not, then it really, really brings into question the pick and what is happening with him.
Yes, it does. And we need to see Isaiah Wilson soon. And regardless of whether we need to or not, probably going to see Isaiah Wilson soon, because right now they're about one injury away from being in serious trouble on that offensive line. Like I've said it a couple times on the show, make plans. Friday morning, we will be here. We will be live doing a show here on Robbie and Rex Road on Black Friday. You'll have your turkey in your belly. Your family members will probably already be on your nerves, and we'll be here for you to take you through Friday morning, looking ahead to Titans and Colts. We'll also be back tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.